Episode 83, Fostering a People-Centric Culture with Luigi Resta. Welcome to The Story in Your Head. I'm Deb Dendy, and today, Ron, myself, and guest Luigi Resta discuss how to foster a people-centric work culture, the challenges infusing family into the business culture, and finding the balance between.
Welcome to the Story in Your Head podcast. Today, our guest is Luigi Resta. Luigi, could you give us a short elevator speech introduction on who you are?
Yeah, thank you, Ron. It's good to be here today. My name is Luigi Resta, and I am the CEO of R Plus Energies, a utility scale renewable energy development company. I wouldn't say that that totally defines me. I'm also a father of three, grandfather of two, and grew up kind of in an academic hippie world in Northern California. So I have a varied background and a varied personality.
Okay, so then I got a question into the academic hippie background. I've many times put those together in my life, never before, but can you expound just a little bit on that background?
Yeah, so my father and my mother met in the early 60s on the Ponte Vecchio in Florence. So my dad was Italian, my mother was American. He was a beatnik artist, and they migrated west to New York, and then from New York to Northern California, Marin County, where they ended up getting separated. But I grew up with my mother in this little bohemian town called Bolinas, which is on the coast in Marin County, Northern California. And in the 60s, it was where all the hippies, academic hippies, were growing up. And as a result, I grew up off the grid on the first sort of certified organic farm in California. We worked on stopping clear-cut logging. When the oil spill happened underneath the Golden Gate Bridge in 1971, it was my parents and those people that got together. So they were really intellectual thinkers. Peter Warshall, Bill Nyman, who started Nyman Beef, Jack Kerouac, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the writers. Those were kind of my parents' peers that I grew up in. Nice. Academic hippies.
Got it. And currently you're residing in Salt Lake City or in the Salt Lake area?
Yeah, I moved to Salt Lake City about 5 years ago when I started R Plus Energies.
Great. Thank you for the brief introduction. Deb, any questions there?
Yeah, thank you, Luigi. You know, it's interesting. So I was looking into your background. Of course, I would look on LinkedIn. And something really stuck out to me. So your chief of staff, Teresa Foxley, she said, couldn't be more proud to work with a leader that has created a culture best summed up as execution-oriented, people-centric, and community-minded. Thank you, Luigi Resta, for blazing this trail. And because we like to talk about culture and company culture on this podcast, I am so curious, like, what does a people-centric culture mean to you?
Well, that probably goes to my background and what we just discussed about growing up in Bolinas in this kind of academic community, academic hippie community, is that what we do matters and everything we do matters and people matter. And so what I would say is that my first position in leading by example is that a handshake makes a difference. When you say you're going to do something, you commit to doing it, that people are first priority, the community is second priority, or, you know, on level. And the project is a byproduct of all the work and commitment to make it successful. So we're execution oriented because we want to move things forward, but not at the sake of the betterment of the community and the people.
Ah, great.
I guess so. That's kind of the way I would describe that.
And how many employees do you have? How many people do you usually have working these projects?
Currently, R Plus has about 50 employees, direct and some kind of full-time consultants, indirect. That's direct employees of my company. And then building actual projects or doing environmental consulting and engineering, at any given time lately, we're probably between 500 and 2,000 people that are touching the work that we're doing.
Now, you just started R Plus. How long ago did you start R Plus?
I started R Plus 5 years ago, but it was really, and I was able to get kind of a, a fast start because I wasn't starting from the beginning. I have 20 years of experience in renewable energy development, and R Plus is the new culmination of my current investor, the Gardner Company, which is a family office, fantastic. They're based here in Salt Lake City, which is the reason why I moved out here. They understand the importance of renewable energy and a diverse energy grid. And so they've been investing. And I really brought, once I started R Plus Energies, I was able to bring people that I've worked with in the past 15 years to the table and to R Plus, like Teresa Foxley as an example, and have really been able to accelerate. And we've built, you know, and completed construction on some solar projects. We're under construction on other ones. We have solar, battery, wind, and are really the premier developer of pumped storage hydro currently in the United States.
Well, that's great. Now, starting out from zero, like you were the first hire, I'm guessing, right? And then you had like three or four. When I first met you, you had three or four people in that business as well. How important is it for culture when you only have three to four people? And then how does it change when you move to 50 people or 1,500 people?
That's a great question. Well, the three or four people, I did start out with some interns that were trying to clear their college credential, and those interns are still with me 5 years later. So that should give you a good indication. They've moved up through the ranks and they have good titles and good salaries. But I would say at the very beginning, I was more focused on execution and projects than I was specifically the people and the culture. And I did have one of my early hires say, Luigi, you're too much of a project company and not enough of a people company. And I clicked and it was like, you're right. I'm focusing on the wrong thing. So that was like 6 months into the new company generation. And I changed. And from that moment forward, it's been people first, project second. And it's remained that way every time.
This was one of your interns that brought this forth for you?
It was an actual employee, but
it was one of your employees. So yeah. Can you comment then on the openness that you've created for your culture, for people to be able to bring things to you?
Yeah, well, we have a weekly all hands call on Friday at 11 o'clock Mountain Time. And again, we span kind of the whole US from time zone. So we do this open house Fridays where it's everybody comes together. We talk about successes, challenges. It is new babies being born or vacations. It's kind of an opportunity for people to talk about anything they want. And it also is a time where we do company evaluations and what are we doing really good and where can we improve. And so it's very much an open forum, and with execution getting extra applause because we clap a lot. And we started this from the very beginning. So from the first week I started the company, I was doing these weekly calls. And I end them always by, you know, it's Friday morning or midday. And I end by saying thank you to everybody for all the work and effort and, you know, commitment and what they do both professionally and personally, because I feel like we have an intrinsic requirement to be good citizens. And so I'm trying to breed that culture that it's not just professional culture, it's personal culture as well. But I end the meetings with make sure to get out and do something healthy and happy, you know, over the weekend every day. So that's like a mantra that we have.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really great. How important or like, is there anything you would share? Like when you go to hire people from new people, like interviewing can be so misleading on what somebody's culture is. How do you go about finding people to join your company? I'm guessing renewable resources, people. Right? Pretty much in demand right now.
Yeah.
How do you go about that?
It's difficult because if you have renewable energy in your LinkedIn profile, you're a target for recruiters to try and grab you. We have taken a slightly different approach. My background is as a developer. And so I've really viewed development that has to be from the very beginning to the very end of construction, meeting with the landowners, meeting with the county commissioners, going through the engineering, going through finance, going through the utility. Not a lot of people have that complete skill set. And I think it's important that you can meet a farmer, right, or a rancher and shake their hand regardless of what their situation. So we've actually hired a lot of younger people that are in their 25 to 35 range. They have some engineering or some kind of experience, and then training them through the process of how do we do development. So we're building an organization with really qualified people that the goal is that when they leave R Plus to go work somewhere else, the people can be like, oh, you worked at R Plus? We definitely want to give you a job. To answer your interview question, I think we did start off with using the A method of hiring. It's a very constrictive, you know, multi-step interview process that has defined questions soliciting certain answers. We've kind of boiled that down to asking questions. Are the people self-thinkers? Are they creative thinkers? And will they take the challenge on and execute? And like, if you ask questions around those, based around those concepts, those are the kind of people we want to hire.
So self-thinker, if I heard that correctly, right? I'm curious, like, how does that show up, a self-thinker? Like, what is your description of it? And then also, like, how does it show up?
Well, oftentimes it's asking a question like, what was really challenging that you had to do in your professional career? And they say, well, you know, I was told to do this. Okay, they didn't think. Or I figured out that we could solve the problem by bringing this person in from somewhere else and this, you know, commodity or whatever it is. And as a result, I was able to solve that concern and issue, right? They solved a problem by themselves without having to kind of ask somebody else to take their order from them.
Got it. And the other one was creative. How do you notice people that are creative?
I would say it kind of goes to that approach to how do they approach situations? Is it prescriptive and mechanical, or are they thinking slightly outside of the box? And if you ask, you know, somebody to go in a straight line, are they going to go in a straight line, or are they going to look to the right, to the left, to see what other options? So it's just kind of reading the in between the lines of their answers, I guess.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, why does that matter? Why does that matter to you that your employees would be able to be creative and self-thinkers?
Well, our industry, which is a blossoming industry in renewable, I mean, we're really, as an industry, it's taking off. There's 250,000 or so employees in the United States. By 2030, we could have 1 million people. What we do is we develop new projects in rural areas that are not always supportive and accustomed to what we're trying to do. And we need to have people that feel empowered and capable to take on those challenges. And ultimately, what we do is overcome challenges. Like, our whole business is to take a step, which then we get run into a challenge, figure out how to solve the challenge, take another step, run into a challenge, figure out how to solve it. And then in the end, we end up building beautiful, great projects that last for generations.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you hired somebody that you had to let go, that didn't fit into the culture?
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. You can't not do that. I wish that there was a way to do that, but it happens.
What is your stand? Like, how do you take care of that?
Well, it's difficult. It depends on what you hired them for and the reason that you have to let them go. Ideally, we always try to work with an individual on a professional development plan. You know, if you notice that they're not doing what they need to be doing for their job, you work to try and create a professional development environment where they can improve and understand where they're missing the mark. So always we try to improve. It's not a de facto, you're not doing your job, we're going to let you go. It's first we have discussions, then we go through a professional improvement plan. And then ultimately, if they're not making the changes to be successful in their job, we just have to let them go. And if that's the case, it's very simple. We've gone through this process. You're aware of it. We're aware of it. You're not fulfilling the need. You're not happy. We're not happy. We're going to let you go. Today's your last day. Pull the Band-Aid off.
I think that's the plan I use. I think that's a very sound plan. Are you looking to strengthen your relationships, whether personally or professionally? You want to learn how to build authentic connections faster, or perhaps you're looking to beat employee burnout through the power of connection? My name is Ron Macklin, founder of Macklin Connection. And in our workshops, We teach you the fundamentals of how to do exactly that and more. To learn more of the power of your relationships, visit us at MacklinConnection.com. One of the things that we hold as a group is that every person has all these stories in their head. That's why we call the podcast The Story in Your Head. We have all these stories in your head, and that's really kind of our philosophy. Like, what is real, what works, what doesn't work, how we choose to live our life. And then every time we come together as a group, we bring all those philosophies and they start bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. Because I've got one, Deb's got one, Luigi's got one. And all those interactions turn into what your culture is in that space. So as we look at like developing those stories, like what does your guys stand for developing, not tactical, like how to develop a field or the electronics or the inverters or all the technical stuff like that, right? Or how to, right? But all those other skills that people need to have, like what is your stand and how do you go about keeping people fresh in their training and knowledge?
Well, I mean, I'll approach this slightly from a spiritual perspective, I guess, because you say those, you know, the ideas in your head, the thoughts in your head. One is that when we talk about those Friday meetings and we have quarterly all hands meetings where everybody comes together, I talk about the importance of breath, right? To breathe is to live. Without breath, you don't have spirit. Without spirit, you can't really achieve anything. And so we start off with the fundamental, like we have to be conscious of what we do. And it starts with our breath. And so that's part of our culture here. And then with that, you can start to improve and develop and learn, because you can start to say, well, this is an area where I want to do more. I want to breathe deeper, right? And so we do spend a lot of time on professional development within the organization. And we've actually created something called the R Plus University, which is why we have this podcast room, where we have subject matter experts talk about specific items of our business in like 10 to 15 minute bites, and people, and then they get assigned to our employees so that they can learn more. Hopefully I answered that question.
No, it was great. Thanks. How is it working? Like, what's your participation rate? How many people are engaging with the thing? What comes out?
Well, it was an older idea that we've just started implementing. And I think we have about 75 lesson plans so far, or podcasts that we've done with our subject matter experts. It is being adopted and it's developing. So it's a little bit of a building the plane while flying. Our goal is to get to several hundred and different levels. And ultimately what we want to create is a mastery of all the disciplines within our renewable energy sector. So whether it's land or interconnection or PPA or finance, that there's these different lesson plans that you can, you know, create a mastery as you go through them and learn. And so somebody that works in land might want to learn about finance. They start taking those classes to get to a point where you could have a mastery of that finance. And then we make all of ourselves available to everybody.
So it's like I can have this may not be the right term. I can have a Luigi in my pocket because I have a cell phone that has the recordings that you and other people have made that represent the culture. So they can carry it around and watch it anywhere.
That's exactly right. Yep.
That's really cool.
Wow.
And we've had some of the employees, you know, that have watched the different courses say they've watched it two or three times because some of the content is really deep and complicated. And so the first draft, you hear half of the words, and then second time you hear a few more. So it is proving to be a useful tool.
That's the power of video, right? Is that, and one of the people we work with is Cindy, and she has a saying, you kind of want to get it all over you, right? Like, so you want to read something, learn it, watch it, try it on, watch it again, and kind of get it all over you so that it becomes a part of who you are.
Absolutely.
That's really powerful. Thank you.
Yeah, Luigi, I've been thinking about not only about your own culture, but the culture of the people that you work with, the landowners and others that your government officials. And how different is that culture from what you're building within your culture? And how do I say this? How does it help you to have the culture you have when you're working with people that have very maybe disparate ideas about things?
Yeah, that is the basis for our business is really bridging that complexity. Because I told you about my background, you know, grew up as an academic hippie. And I find that most of the work that we do is in rural USA, which is extremely conservative, Republican, coal communities. And, you know, how do you bridge that difference as a beginning? And I try to find common ground. And if you go to rural USA, what are they concerned about? They're concerned about multi-generational issues like everybody else. They're concerned about sustainability in the sense that they want their kids to be able to sustain their life in their community, not necessarily green energy and carbon reduction and environmental. It's about the, you know, being good stewards to their community for their purposes. And I think what we try to do with our culture is to understand that we're trying to be good stewards to provide opportunities to continue sustaining the goals and lifestyles that you've had. And that's where we have been successful as a company, because everybody here, if they go out and meet with a farmer, rancher, landowner, legislator, politician, it's the same thing. It's not totally about the environment. It's about opportunity to have a sustainable, diverse economy that every stakeholder has a say and a part in.
And are they usually receptive to that approach?
Sometimes it takes longer than others, but yeah, generally, after a while, they do.
That was a nice way of saying, no, not always.
Sometimes it takes longer than others.
Yeah.
I mean, we developed one project in eastern Utah, Carbon County, Utah. 147 years, they've been mining coal out of the ground. And I started developing this solar project back in 2016, and they saw solar as a direct assault to their way of life. Understandably, you know, solar is taking some of the coal jobs or coal, the benefits of coal generation. Fast forward, I just stayed in the community. Fast forward to 2020, we started construction of that project and we employed 300 people, $250,000 of new tax base, you know, to the community. And 2020 was the first year that that community extracted zero coal out of the ground. So they had no other economic diversity. And it wasn't because of solar that they weren't pulling coal out. It's because it got too expensive. And so now the community is like, can we have another one? We want you to come back. We see the benefit. So it just takes time.
Mm. Yeah, that's great.
Thanks. So Luigi, what do you see as the challenges for keeping your culture or growing your culture in the next 5 years?
Time. Is my challenge that the bigger you get, the larger you get, and the more we are pushing to help, you know, we're trying to help the national energy system transition from coal and natural gas to renewable energy and dispatchable renewable that is firm, that is reliable and resilient. And we don't have, and there's a big need today for that. And we don't necessarily have the people to help execute that. And you hear about it in the power supply, you know, whatever market you are. And as we hire more people within the organization, I think it's going to be how much time can we allow and allot to the culture to keep it? And how much can I allot, you know, to the people and the culture to make sure that we are still doing that while executing on the plan? I think that's probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah, so I heard time, but also numbers. Like as you bring in more and more people who have their philosophies, as Ron pointed out, those philosophies could create a challenge.
Well, and that's why I think it's really important as a foundation, since we started our plus 5 years ago and we've grown to 50 people, that culture is really embedded in the current employees. Mm. And as we hire more people, that culture will rub off. So let's say I have, you know, somebody hires, my project manager hires two more people below them. They have a culture and then that they kind of rub off on the new employees downstream, and they effectively force that we're going to be good people. And in the bottom line, our culture is to be good people and do good things. And if you have a problem with that, you're not a good fit.
Yeah, got it.
That's great. Luigi, this is a chance for you to ask any questions for us. This is what we do for a living, right? And we help people build cultures and we do that. What questions do you have for us?
Well, do you see any areas of improvement that I can adopt?
Deb?
Wow. I have to admit, I was so triggered to see someone mention that you were project focused or action oriented and people centric. I think in some ways, someone can create a story that those two are mutually exclusive. And I'm actually impressed about the way you've been able to maintain that so far. How about you, Ron? What do you see?
Yeah. Well, I don't see anything, Luigi, right now. The things that I would be curious about is how bold do the people feel that they are? Like, can they really put their ideas out there? The part of our, as a human, right, we have this story about what's right, what's good, what's real. But we also have the story of fear. It's in every human. It's in that space. We're not good enough. We're insufficient, not fast enough, not strong enough, not smart enough, whatever that story is. And sometimes we have many of them. When you really have the space where the people around you, you feel like you're believed in, that you're trusted, that you're part of the team, then they can be really creative. I mean, really put themselves out there and do things that, well, at the moment, it may seem like it doesn't work. And then somebody builds on it. And then somebody else builds on it. And then all of a sudden you have a whole new space that you didn't have before. And so the question I have for you is, like, how bold do you see your folks being?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it came up recently because we have different committees that focus on, you know, how can we improve? And, you know, as the leader, CEO, that ultimately the buck stops here. If something goes wrong, I take responsibility for it. Everybody knows that I will be the one, if somebody makes a mistake, to take responsibility. But also I fully empower everybody, that intern that first started, with making decisions and being responsible for the result of those decisions at every level. So, you know, they might not be making a $10 million decision. Maybe it's a $200 decision, or maybe it's a time decision. But we really focus on empowering all of the employees to take responsibility for execution at whatever level, and then applauding them. And if it works great, they get extra applause. If it was something that they ran into trouble with, we say, well, where could we have fixed this? And that allows people to have that individual voice with both their superiors and all the way up to me.
Thank you. That's I want to, in a way, second that space. What people really want, what I want, is I want to make a difference when I show up to work.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have somebody respect me for who I am and what my ideas are. And I get to contribute. And that's more important than the money.
Yeah.
To who I hang out with in that space. So I acknowledge you for that. Thank you. Deb, anything else?
Yeah, I was thinking also about blame and responsibility. Because in a closed culture where people might not be so open to ideas, failure can be seen as something bad, right? And I got to find someone to blame because this isn't good that I did this. And so that open kind of culture where you can make mistakes and it's okay because you learn from them really allows people to take responsibility for things as well, instead of trying to pass that buck or blame someone else. So that's great.
I would add something that's thinking about this too, is that my brother is a consultant and he's worked for all the big consulting firms. And their information is power. And as a result, nobody shares their information. And here we are exactly the opposite, where transparency is power and full, you know, disclosure is, and openness is power. Like, we are sharing so the collective can be successful, not any specific individual. And I think that's really, that goes to the culture thing that we talked about, but is something that, I mean, we from myself to my CEO to CFO, to Teresa, are fully transparent and open with all the employees about everything that's happening, both good and bad, because it's important for them to understand what's happening.
Yeah, that appears to me as uncommon. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Luigi. Luigi, any last comments before we close her down?
No, this has been great. I've really enjoyed speaking with both of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And thank you. Thank you for being on the podcast. And thank you very much, Luigi.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. At Macklin Connection, we believe making authentic connections with others can literally change your world. We invite you to share this podcast with one person that you care about. Maybe it's someone you haven't spoken with in a really long time and you'd love to reconnect. Or maybe it's the first person that popped into your head when you listened to this podcast because you thought it would be perfect for them. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.